podcast presented by Party Fish Media, a showcase of the best emerging filmmakers under the age of 25 from all over the world. Film starts here at Nifty 2022 in Seattle, Washington, April 28th through May 1st, and online through May 8th. I'm here today with the director and writer of Srikandi, and I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Hi, my name is Andrea, full name Andrea Nirmala Wijayanto. I was born and raised in Indonesia, but now I'm based in Vancouver, BC.
Please tell us a little bit about the film, just for the listeners to hear about it, and then kind of where that story came from in your life, or you know, what kind of inspired this really beautiful story.
Yeah, so Srikandi is actually a modern retelling of an Indonesian myth of the same name. But in our interpretation, it follows a 17-year-old girl called Anjani, and she's the daughter of a very famous shadow puppeteer in the village that has recently passed away. So now that they're left with dealing with a lot of financial loss, because shadow puppeteering was their main source of income, they have to figure out what are their next steps to do as a mother-daughter duo that doesn't always see eye to eye. And yeah, it's really about finding or following your passion, but this way told through like shadow puppetry. And this story, it just came to me at our last few months of film school when we had to do a project there. And I think I was just feeling really homesick because it was my first year abroad and really just wanting to reconnect with my roots and with my culture. And I've been looking a lot into shadow puppets because they're so distinct to Japanese culture, which is what my ancestry is. And I found a lot of similarities between shadow puppetry and filmmaking because there's just a very much a lack of gender inequality in both art forms. Mm-hmm. And I think that was my personal connection to it, was because I was able to see myself in, for example, like a female shadow puppeteer who wanted but isn't able to just because of gender norms and traditional cultures. And it's really about finding that balance of like keeping your tradition and culture, but also progressing forward in how the world works, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the origin.
That's really interesting. How are you enjoying living in Vancouver so far? Or is it really new?
It's been 3 years now, but I'm actually leaning towards moving to the East Coast. I'm actually thinking of doing a move to Toronto. Vancouver's been great for me so far. I just feel I'm not able to find as much opportunities in Vancouver, with what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. But I feel like there's more support in Toronto, or like there's definitely more opportunities because of how Vancouver as a city works. We're like Hollywood North, so
right.
People go up there to shoot because it's like for tax credits purposes, but they would fly in directors from LA or New York or Toronto. So our local talent is used as crew, and I guess if you're a below the line film worker, it works great. But as a creator, if you want to write, direct, produce, I find it's very much limiting because all of those opportunities are already taken away from people outside and just coming in. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think also just like as a creative, it's just, so you feel it when you're in the right place and when you're not in the right place.
Yeah.
And you kind of just have to keep exploring. And then, yeah, hopefully Toronto. I've heard Toronto's really cool, really great place. So I've also heard Montreal has a really cool creative scene, too.
Like that's just what I've heard. Yeah. In terms of Canada, I think, like, the East Coast definitely has a more, like, open and more diverse and creative pull over. I feel Vancouver's too much more business side for
totally.
Me.
Totally. Yeah, like when you're from, like, North Hollywood. And then going into the beautiful film that you made, I love this, like, it was shot in Indonesia, yes?
It was actually shot in Vancouver.
Oh, but you made the set.
Yeah.
It looked like it was in Indonesia.
Yeah.
So, cool. So what was kind of the process of making this apartment or, you know, where you shot look like this kind of Indonesian house and pulling that culture in and working with your production designer? I would just love to hear more about the production design and creating that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was definitely a challenge because when we were going location scouting, it was one of the most important things that we were able to find a location that we could cheat as Indonesia too. Luckily, we shot in the summer, which helped with weather-wise and how it actually looked in a tropical country. But when I was scouting, the most things that I was paying attention to was the exteriors, because mm-hmm. you can easily cheat an interior, but with exteriors it's much more difficult. And then we somehow found this studio. Like, I first looked into the studio because I saw the building online and it looked rustic. Mm. So I was like, okay, there's a start there.
Yeah.
And then we went location scouting, and then turns out they have like this whole backyard and it looks like run down, which is perfect for the tone of like an Indonesian village. And then when I was looking at the plants, I was like, oh, these are actually tropical plants that like it actually sold the world so much to me. But like, what was very weird was that when we were out in the porch, and I was like, my producer knew at that instant that he was like, fuck, she's in love with this location and like won't never let this go. Like, I think she found her baby, and like it matches the script perfectly well. Because usually if you, like, sometimes I would have to change the script depending on the location we got. But actually with this one, it was like so fits in like naturally. But what really pulled us over was like when we were looking out at the porch, there was actually an Indonesian statue there.
Oh, wow.
That the owner of the location bought during his time in Indonesia. So I feel like that was just a big sign of,
so meant to be.
It was really meant to be too. And even from like, in order to beg my producer of like, this is, if I wanted to spend money, it would be on location, because even the windows are like the windows that are in Indonesia. So even the architecture just helps sold it.
Yeah, and I love that you bring up the porch. I mean, that whole final scene when she's walking out. You know, no spoilers, but yeah, just like the end is so beautiful, and the way that shot with the very final shot as she's walking out. And that's so interesting. That's actually in Vancouver. It totally, the world was so sold for me. I love that. And then did you work with a production designer for the interiors? Because the interiors were really beautiful. So
no, she did a really great job. Yeah, my production designer is Rachel. We actually met in film school, and she have production designed all of my shorts since, except for my latest one. We actually had a lot of help in terms of PD from the Consulate General of Indonesia in Vancouver.
Wow.
Because we had to outsource a lot of the musical instruments, and a lot of the props too were donated from like trade centers in Vancouver, Indonesian trade shops. So yeah, they basically acted like our free prop house, and they donated everything, let us borrow everything as long as we brought them back, which is a super fair deal. But Rachel, we watched a lot of Indonesian films together just for research. But I think for PD, my biggest reference was just Shoplifters by Koreeda.
Yeah, so beautiful. I totally see that.
Yeah, because I just told her like it needs to feel like organized chaos. Like like if you're poor, like a lot of things that you don't have is space, so it just needs to like feel packed but organized at a certain point. Organized cluster.
I love that. That's really cool, the communication. I feel like that's the most important thing as a director, when you're like just communicating with your crew and with those really succinct articulate direction, where it's like chaos but organized, you know, and like all these little things. And on the note of the puppets, the shadow puppetry was obviously this like very strong visual element in the film, and it's just so powerful in the way it was shot with the shadows. I'm just really curious, kind of like working with your cinematographer, what was that like creating the way that looked on film?
It was honestly really one of the smoothest processes I've ever had with a DP, because the DP is actually also Indonesian, and we also met at school, and I think it really helped too because all of the cast was Indonesian, so it was very nice to have someone who's able to speak their language when they're pointing a camera at you, especially we're working with non-actors too, so you really need that sensitivity of just making sure that the camera feels invisible. So I think that was my main priority when talking with him, was like, listen, these are non-actors, so I'm not really wanting this film to be so much staged, especially with the tone that we're going for. I feel like going more realism and naturalistic is the better way. So we definitely made a shot list, but these shot lists are so not based off blocking. They are very much loose to blocking. Like, we could change the blocking, and then like we could just reposition the camera. Like, it doesn't really break our film. So we had them in place, and like turns out like the blocking was natural to the actors, which worked out well. But talking about the shadows, we watched again a lot of Indonesian films just for references. And then we watched a lot of like shadow puppeteer shows too, to see how they're usually shot, because sometimes they do like a live stream. Mm-hmm. And we just really worked as like the screen being the centerpiece of it, and then see which different angles can we take that look more interesting, which ones haven't been done before, or if they have been done before in a film and they look really good, we stole it.
Of course.
No shame.
Yes,
if it works, don't break it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that was like our process too, and I feel like it also works that we both already have a similar style of like visuals that we like and a color palette that we liked. So yeah, it all worked out really well.
Yeah, the colors are beautiful, and I'm sure all of that was really integrated with your whole crew. The color's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really was curious. I didn't know that they were non-actors. I didn't know you're working with non-actors. I was curious, how did you end up finding the non-actors?
Yeah, I've actually been working with non-actors all of my shorts now. I guess all of the Indonesian shorts that I made in Vancouver are all non-actors, just because of the fact that there aren't any, except for one. The main character Rai is trained academically as an actor, but everyone else was a non-actor. I met the father who played the shadow puppeteer. He's actually a real life shadow puppeteer. And I met him during film school when I was initially talking about the project and I wanted to learn more about shadow puppets. And I know that in order going into this film, that I needed to do a lot of research by myself, just for me to fully understand the craft and the myth that goes on behind it. So before going to film, I definitely reached, he was one of the first people I reached out, because without him there wouldn't really be a film. So definitely learned a lot from him about shadow puppetry, and then of course it just came natural because he's playing himself in the film. And then for the mom, she was just like one of our closest friends. Like, I have like far family in Vancouver, like kind of like my uncle's cousin. And they were just friends with my family relatives, so like we always meet each other when like the Indonesian community gets together. And I know she was perfect just because she had a really crazy life actually before, and like she was a model, she was doing commercials, so I know she wasn't shy of the camera. And even though
super important, yeah
because I feel like from a non-actor, there's only, I'm not asking a lot from a non-actor really, like I just want them to be confident and like want to go all out. I feel like it's really the only thing you can ask from someone, you know, like if they want to go for it, if they're brave enough. You don't really need a skill to like memorize anything or like really know filmmaking techniques. Like, we can help you there, you know, as long as you're just down to do whatever. And she was super, so
cool. Yeah, I love just that, the confidence element. It's so important in the whole process. Everyone just coming to it with such confidence, and that just sounds really interesting. And then what was it like working with the main actress and that kind of collaboration? Like, did you talk to her about the part, or what was that collaboration like, if there's anything you want to say about it?
Yeah, so actually I wrote this script with her playing it in mind, so I don't know what I would have done if she would have said no, really. But I think we were all at the point, because we shot this in July 2020 in the midst of the pandemic, so I think everyone was just trying to channel their creativity into something after being cooped up in a lockdown for so long, that like anything film work that we could get was just like, yeah, we're gonna go for it. So yeah, she was super down, especially she actually hasn't acted in something in Indonesian before. All of the things she acted was in English, so it was a good challenge for both of us in doing like our first Indonesian film abroad. And yeah, since then, like, I feel like just because I know her as a person before I knew her as an actor, it was really easy communicating with her, because like she was just like one of my friends. So we have a very honest conversation, and like I can ask, it's much easier for me to communicate because I'm not thinking of it as so much professional, but like just us being able to talk about whatever.
Yes.
And now I feel like she's gonna play a part in any of my movies. Like, she's in my next short, so like
just, it works.
Yeah,
you
make it
connection
works.
And you can talk about things like talked about in another interview, just like vulnerability is so important, and being able to be vulnerable with each other. And yeah. being able to have ideas and listen to each other's ideas. I'm also curious about the music. You know, what was kind of, how did you find that music? And or did you work with a composer? What was that process like?
Yeah, so interesting enough, we had a very nice schedule to work with, actually. We shot 5 pages in 2 days, which gave us a lot of breathing room.
That's great.
Yeah, because we were only able to have 6 people on set. So we really wanted that time for us to be able to have those multiple hats on set. And actually what happened was while we were waiting for our DP, who is also like our first AC and gaffer and key grip and everything, to set up like the scene, we're like, oh, what could we do? And then Sutrisno, the shadow puppeteer, just started playing instruments. And then we're like, oh, why don't we just grab that? Like him playing instruments of solo, of the solo of different instruments that were available there. And then I asked him too, like, what would be usually playing in like a story like this. So we went from there, and then during the sound mix or the sound design post process, we had all of the instruments recorded, and we really just had to piece it together, and that's what the composer and the shadow puppeteer did. So it was just very natural. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds amazing. And then, you know, as you talk about it coming together and working with 6 people on set and then your composer, kind of what was it like bringing the people together to make this happen? And like, how did, so you found this fairy tale, or it's not also called, you found this story, this Indonesian story, and you wanted to tell it, you know, how did that kind of, the slow start, you know, kind of piece by piece, who did you grab? And then how did it develop into reality?
I actually didn't come with the folklore in mind first. What came to me the first was I knew I wanted to do a story about the shadow of the daughter of a shadow puppeteer, and the whole point was just, oh, maybe this is a spoiler, but but the whole point is that she's possessed by her father, and then like that's the way she gets an answer of what she's supposed to do with her life. That was the main story that I pitched, and we pitched it to a competition in Vancouver called Mighty Asian Movie Making Marathon. And it was like an annual program that they do every summer for Asian shorts. And they did it in the pandemic, but like I said, one of the rules was like we had to keep it like a very small crew. So we pitched it, and then we got to top 10, and then so that means we got greenlit. But the thing was, we only had we only had a month to write, shoot, and edit. So yeah, we immediately, like after we knew we were selected, we just went straight into prep. And then I just DM'd all of my friends that I knew. I'm like, hey, would you shoot this? Hey, would you PD this? Because really, I am just looking for a cinematographer and a PD and an editor. Because like, again, with 6 people, my PD wasn't even able to be on set. Like, wow. She had to pre-dress everything the day before and didn't come to set. So yeah, I just started with the head, and like, they were all my friends anyway. And yeah, so for those 2 weeks, we just kind of spent every day together, just like meeting at my place. And it was actually like a very mind-opening process of like actually how small you can make a crew to make a film. Like it actually doesn't take a lot.
It didn't feel small. It felt like very, you know, built out production and everything. So it's cool that... Yeah, you only had six people.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely one of my most favorite ways of shooting, because it's less pressure when like you have like 20 people's eyes on you when you're directing, and it's just like I rather just have it like a small tight-knit crew. Of course, I don't think it's more sustainable like into a further career where like everyone needs to get paid and like et cetera. But for this particular project, it works really well.
It's all about what works for the story, right? Yeah, like for this story and the intimacy of it and the family, I can see it kind of being nice to have be smaller crew.
Yeah, and I find it like less information gets lost as well, just because like it is just our group chat with like 6 people, so everyone knows what like everyone knows what everything is going like all the time, so that really helps. And also like having it just makes more sense, and I don't know why it's not more like we don't see this more often, or maybe it's just the projects that I've been a part of, that like actually by doing this and like having the production designer there when you shot list and having the editor there mm-hmm. when you shot list is actually super helpful, because usually like I usually freelance as an AD, and like in shot listing meetings it's just me and the director and the DP, and they exclude other heads of department. But because we were only six people and all the head departments were there every day, so it was just like super helpful to, you know, build your shot list with your PD. Like, they're going to be the one that's putting the things in your frame. Like, why shouldn't they have a say in it? Similar with the editor, too. Like, it helps us know, like, because we had such a short post timeline, I always just want to shoot. I shoot in a way where there's only really one way to edit it.
Yeah.
So, like, it was very helpful to have his opinion, too, of saying, like, this wouldn't cut. Like, I think she'd make it two shots instead of one shot instead of two. It was very, very eye-opening.
That sounds like a really amazing process. I want to kind of segue into, you know, what you've accomplished so much. You kind of, in your intro to the film when you submitted it, you've accomplished some really great things. You've gotten to some really cool festivals, you've done some cool things, and I wanted to hear a little bit about specifically this experimental forest writing workshop you went to. And I was just wondering if you could tell us a little about like what you're working on there, and then is that your next thing you're working on, or?
Yeah, so that was actually a workshop that I did after I shot Shrikandi. It was around September 2020. An experimental forest is a production company in Vancouver, and they do really cool stuff and have accomplished so much too in their portfolio. And what they did was like they selected six writer directors or six writers and to develop their scripts, which I think is a really great initiative, because we don't have enough programs like developing short scripts and helping filmmakers there. So it was run by Kathleen Hepburn and Gorman Lee, and so they developed our short scripts for over 2-3 months, meeting like every 2 weeks, and then it was like trying to give us a sense of how it feels to be in the writer's room, of like how to give feedback but also receive feedback and constructive feedback as a writer. So that was a really cool experience. The short that I developed or workshopped in that project, I still haven't made yet. Mm-hmm. It was about like a friend, like a couple of like immigrant friends in a diner, and it was like their last night together because one of them was getting deported. Mm-hmm. I haven't really gone to fruition yet because it was based on a real story. Like my friend got deported and had to go home, and it was really hard for all of us. Like it broke our friend group. And there was never a right time for it, but I don't know, maybe in the future.
Maybe when, like, some more time heals and
that
kind of thing, maybe, right? Just, giving it space. But that's really fascinating that you were able to, like, create something from that pain or what happened, and that you were able to go to this workshop and use that and find a creative way to...
Yeah, even so, like, you meet other writers or filmmakers and they have other resources, too, that, like, are so valuable. And you just learn everything. Even though it's not for a particular project, you still grow by going through a workshop or a program,
Very cool. And then, what is next? And also, could you tell us where we can kind of keep up with you? Maybe your Instagram or your Twitter, your website, where you want to kind of share with us what you're doing next?
So we actually just wrapped post-production on my next short. It's called Bao Mera Bom Puti, and it translates to shallots and garlic. We were one of the recipients of the Get Real Scholarship program, and it's run by Stella's Place in Toronto, which is a youth mental health program, and they supported four shorts in the beginning of this year of 2022, and we just shot it in March, and their theme for this year, they funded shorts that was about experiences in the pandemic, and for me, it was about telling my eating disorders during the pandemic, but I decided to tell it through a story of a food film / body horror film.
Wow.
Hence the name Shallots and Garlic, which is also based on an Indonesian folklore name, but the name, like the story is not really the same. And then after this, we're actually in September, me and my producer are gonna fly back home to Indonesia. We're gonna shoot our next short, which is actually funded by Nifty's pitch competition that we won last year, called Sawo Matang, and it's our first project shooting in Indonesia with an Indonesian crew, and we also have an Indonesian producer there. So really excited about that one. It's like a sci-fi romance coming of age film, and it my most personal film to date, and it's about racial tensions between Native Indonesians and Chinese Indonesians. But yeah, trying to develop a feature of the same vein of the one that's I'm for Sawo Matang. And then other than that, I'm just trying to stay alive, I guess, and survive.
I get that.
Sure. I'm definitely on Instagram. Me and my producing partner actually just launched our production company called Pigeon Productions, and that's PIDGIN. We're on Instagram at Pigeon Prod, and that's where we post all of our new work, because we're opening up to be a production service company to offer help and support for other filmmakers and to give us a little bit of context of what we do, hence the name Pigeon. It's an amalgamation. I'm just gonna say in the way that I do know. So Pigeon is like if either of us don't speak a common language or a lingua franca like English and we speak different languages, a pigeon would be a combination of both of our languages, but it's in simplest form. So we kind of took that name and thought, okay, like we through our work want to build this bridge to gap our differences and make films or make content that could be our shared language that we all could understand, and that's usually films, because it doesn't really matter what language a film is, you could connect with it in any way. We started producing shorts, and we're gonna try to go more into music videos and commercials, but yes, the main focus is narrative and on bridging that gap. Yeah.
That sounds really cool. I can't wait to see what your company does and to kind of look it up and
fingers crossed.
Involved. I'm sure it'll do great. It sounds like, I feel like there's such a cultural, people want to combine cultures and people want to bridge that gap that you're talking about. I feel like people really, it's the time to do it. And I hope that it,
It's time for change.
I'm sure you'll meet really great people through that too, which will be really, really fun. And, Andrea, it was so nice meeting you. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It was so great. I loved watching this film and, just thank you for being here. Thanks for listening, everybody. For more information on NIFTY 2022 or upcoming events, the talented youth and more emerging filmmakers, check out nifty.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at NFFTY or on Instagram at niftyfilm. For more podcasts from Party Fish Media, search Party Fish Media wherever you listen to podcasts or follow us on social media at Party Fish Media.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.